Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Sober Indian Saturday Night Live. Tonight, we have Michael coming on the show. He's going to speak with everyone and tell his story. Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
Bonjour. I'm doing good. I'd like to introduce myself real quick before we get started, as I've been taught to do. Bujo nindinwe maganag, bujo nijino ki maganidug, minawad nijgikinua maganidug, all manganason dishinikaz, migaziendo dame, gamizagasquaj may cog in dunjaba, gagmunga damon in da, nashkewa benes, nos, o minawa inga, bagwajakwe, Niminwenda Mayayan Omanungum Chimigwicha O Niji Patrick Jigagwejum Nin Jigagigado Omanungum Dibikuk Bungi Tago Ninitao Jibwem Ninandigikendan Gayabi Nan Ninandigikendan O Anishinabe Moin Minua O Anishinabe Zichigewad Minua O Adizukanag Aoa mi iu minikwa gagigido an ojibwemo niwi gagigid bungi to go jagnashimong to bizindawian bizindawie dawan jinisidutan o. Good evening, my fellow people, fellow learners, workers, and helpers, and just all the wonderful people who are listening tonight. My name is Michael Smith Jr. I am from the Leech Lake Reservation in northern Minnesota. I'm from the Eagle Clan, and I'm the honored son of spiritual advisor Mike Smith Sr. Did a lot of work with the corrections facilities and did a lot of work with sobriety, and the honored son of Patty Smith. She does working with women in recovery as well, and does a lot of traditional cultural teachings for the women in our communities. And I'm thankful to my friend Patrick for helping me get connected here tonight. I'm really grateful for him being a part of my life. So if you're listening, Patrick, miigwech.
Well, thank you for the introduction. Let's start with the beginning of your story, where you with the addiction before you got to recover.
I'm not sure how to really word this, Karen. I guess I'll just come right out and say it. I am not actually in recovery. I have never battled addiction in my life. I am lifelong sober. I am 21 years, and I have never even picked up so much as a cigarette. So I thought about that tonight as I was getting ready to come on here, and I thought, I wonder, because I'm reading on the bio and it says, I'm like, oh my gosh, I wonder if he told her. I've never touched those substances. So, but I do work with a lot of people in our community that are in recovery. Like I said, my father, he went into 9 different state and federal prisons for the first 11 years of my life. He was going around doing cultural practices, and then the prisoners would get out, and then there was, I believe there still is in place, a state penitentiarial mandate, a penal mandate, where prisoners cannot have contact with their spiritual person that came in and did cultural work with them for, I believe it's 2 or 3 years after they get out. So that was really hard for us, but after that time expired, they'd come around and they'd talk with us, and they would get on their, they were on their red road, you know, after they were released, but coming around us, it was like, oh my gosh, we haven't seen you in so many years. But yeah, so no, I did not, I have not I'm not actively in recovery, nor am I. I've never done any of that. So I'm sorry if that complicates things.
Oh, no, it doesn't. It doesn't complicate at all. And I apologize because I was not aware of that. So I apologize for that. So please tell us what you do and what you find so rewarding about what you do.
Yeah. Yep. Well, you know, when my dad would go, he would be on the road 8 days a week. You know, I say that because there were times where he would be doubling up on shifts, and then at home we would always, my mom would be working with our community, and I understood through learning about our history as Native people, and not just of the Ojibwe and Anishinaabe here, but of all Native people around Turtle Island that we call our home, I learned that there were things that happened that were beyond our control, external things like colonization and all this genetic trauma that trickled down to our current generations. And I understood that, you know, that sobriety is something that is very hard to keep. I saw a lot of my friends around me, they were turning to those substances because they didn't have anyone at home. They didn't have anyone that they could really go to. And it was so hard. And so for me growing up, I understood the value of that sobriety. And I understood that, you know, our people, my people up here, you know, they needed our young people. That's one of the things that the elders, I heard at ceremonies and gatherings, the elders would get up and they would speak about, there's prophecies told that said, you know, we're going to have trouble with our youth, and that, you know, the youth are going to turn on our ways. The youth are going to be lost. And it was always, it was really hard for me to hear it because I understood that what they were talking about. I understood that they were talking about, you know, the other youth in the community. I understood that they were talking about some of my friends and neighbors. But what I saw in there was an opportunity to give not only our elders but our community hope that our young people can stay sober. They can be sober through their whole life. They don't have to go down that path and then, you know, recover. And I understand, you know, there's a lot of things that happen in people's lives. I've seen it, from loss of parents to siblings to destructive and harmful relatives coming and staying with people. There's many reasons. But I understood that it was my responsibility. And for the longest time, I felt it was mine and alone. And that was a weight that I carried. And it wasn't a healthy weight. I had to understand that I was one of the pillars. I wasn't the only pillar, but I was one of those pillars. Because there was other young people in my community that I saw as the years went on that were sober and that were helping to bring those other young folks into sobriety, and I wanted to work with them and help them. And so I remember when I was very young, people would come over seeking help from my father and mother, and they would be talking about their issues and problems, and then I would go with the children. And very quickly, very early on, I kind of filled the role that my parents were doing for the adults. I was with the children. The children would tell me things about what they've experienced and what had happened to them and how they were processing it. And through that, I started kind of, you know, helping them through that, saying, well, you know, let's there's this going on, there's this gathering, there's this ceremony that we're going to, or, you know, here's some things that I've found help, you know, with frustration and, you know, holding that resentment against people. And so early on, I was kind of starting to see myself step into that role of helping people, and I realized that was another thing that bolstered my will to stay sober, was that, you know, I need to be there for these younger kids, and I don't mean to be boastful, but I understand that, you know, and because I went through loss of grandparents. My great-grandmother passed away, my grandfather passed away, he was very close with me, and I thought, you know, I understand that grieving, that pain, and I thought, you know, I could understand why people turn to those, because it, you know, it helps to numb things, you know, but we have our ceremonies, which is what I was fortunate enough to be able to be turned to, which help with grieving, with help with, you know, remember the person and dealing with that grief in a healthy way. And then after that, I kind of focused on my education, and I was still helping, you know, my father. He came home, his contracts were up, and he was unable to travel very far. And so he started working at the men's halfway house here in Leech Lake on the reservation. And I started tagging along with him and helping him with the ceremonies, the opening prayers, and then I landed a contract up there with them helping with the sweat lodge, keeping fire for the sweat lodges. And I got a lot of really good conversations listening to those guys. They would come out and they would talk, and it was just nice to hear, you know, people were so, they were so excited, because the sweat was once a week. It was once a week, and, you know, when they're in there, you know, there wasn't that much else going on that I saw that really invigorated them and made them feel as alive as when they went in that sweat. And so I understood the value of our culture. You know, I always understood that, but I really saw it from their perspective, the value of our ceremonies and our way of life on full display about how valuable it is. And because we had, my mom and dad had for a long time, and still are to this day, advocating for cultural programming in... It started out in correctional facilities, and then it's moved now to our ICWA and child welfare placement, advocating to be understanding and culturally sensitive to those beliefs, because that is our way of life. That was given to us by the Creator, and it starts at an early age, and it goes. It's not something that you pick up and say, okay, I'm going to live this life for so many years, and then, okay, I've graduated from Anishinaabe Academy, you know. It's something that you keep living at and working at through your life, and that's why when I did my introduction, I said, welcome to my fellow learners, because we believe that you're always still learning. And so... For me, I kept learning, and when I was up there keeping those fires, I learned again the value that those men saw in our ceremonies. They were men of all ages. They were men that were actually younger than me, only by, you know, a few months or I think a year. There were other elders that were, you know, 3, 4, 5 times my age. And I was like, wow, you know, they... All throughout, all these different generations are coming to this. And then after that, after I was helping with the fires, then they offered me another contract to actually come in and do talks. And so I did start coming in and doing cultural talks, and we would bring up animals and do cleaning, and we would do traditional activities. We made taps for maple sugar bushing out of sumac, and those guys were so excited. It was so nice to see our culture being implemented in a way that helped these guys, and they were excited. And it showed me again that, you know, there's so much value in keeping in our cultural ways, in helping people on the road to recovery, you know. And and then I got in, that contract expired, and then a little while later I applied for a contract down at the St. Cloud Veterans Association. That's the Veterans Hospital here in Minnesota, one of them, the one in St. Cloud. And I'm still there. We're not doing anything because of the pandemic, but I was going down twice a month doing sweats and cultural programming in the morning, talks with the veterans, and that was a really unique experience because for me growing up, I saw a lot of the effects of the growing up effects that, you know, hurt people, like homelessness, you know, like generational addiction, you know. Oh, grandma and grandpa are drinking, you know. Mom and dad are doing pills. Well, I guess I might as well follow in their footsteps with the next thing. You know, I saw that in my community, and I understood that it was the generational, the historical trauma was a very pertinent contributing factor to that. But then to meet the veterans and to talk with them and to really understand, you know, that it wasn't just in the Native community that I saw this, you know, because they spoke about things in their lives when they were younger, things that happened to them, and I'm like, this is a very similar story to something I saw my neighbor go through, or I know that I heard this being talked about before by a different person, and it's so much of this. So much of this hurt that we carry around. And I think that's one of the things that I attribute my lifelong sobriety to, is that I was fortunate enough to have two parents in the home that both loved me very much, and they took me to places to help me properly deal with the pain of losing a relative, of seeing all this negativity around me, and that's one of my missions now is I work with the Family Spirit Program. We recently won a Pinwheel Award for our work in the community, and we work with young families. And my part of my job is to advocate for the culture in the programming. And so what I do is, if there's something like, okay, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, baby's first steps, my job would be to come in and say, okay, here's the traditionally cultural approach, which would be that first pair of moccasins for the baby would be made with a little hole in the bottom so that they always maintain that connection to Gikakin, to Mother Earth. Just those little things to help the younger parents who maybe never received any or hardly any of those teachings, just so that they can know that, you know, here's how we live culturally, here's how we live traditionally. And there's one thing that's going on in our community, and, you know, it seemed very prevalent before, and it feels like it's getting worse. It feels like it fluctuates sometimes, but it's this kind of almost this hoarding of information. There's a lot of people that they have knowledge and wisdom, and they seem kind of apprehensive to share it, or there's a lot of needlessly complicated jargon to get that information. And so what we, my family and I, we try and work at is making sure that that information is accessible to everyone. You know, if you come to us asking, we don't want to make you have to walk on, you know, razor blades to get the answer, you know. And I feel like it's some of that kind of contributes, you know. If somebody's, they only have so much energy in them to go out and seek that stuff, it shouldn't be so far away, because then it's like, wow, you know what, I tried, I gave it every bit that I had, and it wasn't there. It was so far away, it was so, you know, so difficult, I'm just going to go down another path that's way simpler. I mean, we pretty much all know how simple it is to get a bottle or find a pill or some drugs. We made a statement about, you know, when you come to one of our spiritual leaders, you're not 100% sure what you're coming for. You know, you don't know, I want to ask for my name and I'd like my colors as well, and this and that. You know, you don't know all that. You're like, okay, I'm just going to come here, I don't know, I just want to learn. What do you want to learn? Well, whatever you want to teach me. Well, you've got to have something specific you want to know. But if you go to, say, the local drug dealer's house, you're like, yep, I know exactly what I want. I want this much of this kind of thing, you know. And so being more open with our culture, because for us, you know, we worked with the DOC, and we worked with ICWA, and we even worked with the hospitals, and all these different programs, institutions, and facilities. And what we realized was that if you approach it, first of all, if you approach it with our SEMA, you know, our tobacco, or we put out our tobacco and we say we want to help the people, we're going into this meeting to talk to these people, the spirits hear that and they come and help us. And talking to them nice and human, and not saying, you need to let us do this and that, you know, just saying, hey, here's the thing. This is who we are. This has been proven to help us. It's so they will implement those policies to allow us to do the traditional ceremonies. But then on the other hand, it's almost impossible to get people to give up that information, and not give it up, just to share it, you know. There's a consensus that if you know something that nobody else knows, you become more quote-unquote powerful or more valuable, like, you know. And that's an Anishinaabe way to believe, in our opinion, you know, that you don't, your value isn't based on how much you know that you don't share, but it's partially based on how much you share with others. Even if you share one thing, you know, it's teachings about smudging, you know, when we clean ourselves off and help to set our spirits free. If you share the teachings about the significance of the hands, the ears, the heart, the nose, if you share that with as many people that ask, you know, you're doing more for our people than if you say, well, I know the importance of the eagle feather, or I know why, you know, I know this old, old story, but I'm not going to tell anybody, but I know it. Then it does more damage to our community. And I understand, you know, I don't know how wide your podcast goes, and I'm sorry if I'm saying things that are upsetting or contradictory to some of your listeners' beliefs, but it is my truth, and I appreciate those of you that may disagree for listening to me respectfully, as I would do if you spoke something. But understanding the cultural role in our recovery, and not only our recovery, but in keeping us on that path, you know, from birth to death, is something that you can explain it, but it's sometimes best to show. You know, when you see, you know, that when you, you know, they say, you know, oh, well, they only listen to the scientists because they produce data, they produce pie charts. You know, everybody likes a pie chart. It doesn't even have to be about anything. It's just how many green M&Ms and how many blue M&Ms are in the bag. And they're like, wow, that guy really knows what he's talking about, you know. You know, pie charts spice things up. And they show the pie charts and like, okay, here's the amount of people that recovered, that went into recovery and are staying past the 1, 2, 3 years with the cultural programming and the people there versus without. And I'm not saying that our spiritual ways are the only way to recovery, but for our people, it works best for us. And that's one of the things that we have really fought, you know, not physically, but mentally, verbally. We've sat patiently and we've kept going back and back and conceding to so much. But in the end, the culture gets into the programming, and that's what we see as a success. We see that as, you know, okay, they have an access to that. And, you know, there is no complete, there isn't even part of a quote-unquote curriculum for how to be an Anishinaabe. It is just a way of life, and however you want to live it is up to you. And somebody that goes into the halfway house, they learn about it, and they get out, and they can either carry on, or they can go seek out those elders, and both are perfectly valid and viable paths. But our one thing is, as our people, the history with us, we can't really afford to not learn those things. We can't afford to not, you know, practice our ceremonies or learn our language. We can't afford not to even try, you know. That's the thing, because, you know, our way of life has survived through so much because of our trying. You know, long ago when our elders were being forced to sign the treaties, you know, they knew that what they were signing wasn't perfect, but they did what they could. I just came from a meeting the other day talking about the Minnesota Chippewa tribe, which is a conglomerate of tribes in Minnesota, except for Red Lake, that got together. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was getting together to build a place that would be owned and operated by the tribes, where culture and traditional programming would be not under as much regulation, you know, because there are certain constraints that you have to make when you're working in the non-native world. Like for us, when we do our traditional smudge, you know, we don't, in the hospital, they make a kind of a big deal about, they say, well, you know, you can't be smudging, you know, you can't, because the smoke detectors would go off. You know, we say, well, is there a place that we can do this? And they're like, well, you might have to go out in the parking lot. And, you know, we've conceded on that, you know, but it is kind of like, you know, why does our stuff, we have to make all these concessions when there's so much else on, you know, the, you know, and I don't mean to bash Christianity or people that believe in the Catholic way, but, you know, there's a lot of liberties that they're allowed that we're not fortunate to receive. And, but anyways, there's so many parts to recovery, and, you know, in our way, everything is connected. So when you start talking about one thing, it goes into the next and into the next, and then pretty much, pretty soon you're like, okay, hold on a second, Micah. We asked you to come on here and talk about sobriety. Why are you talking about implementing cultural programming? You know, I did host a radio show. I understand people come for what they think is going to be on there, and they're kind of like, what? If it doesn't happen exactly, you know. But So, is there any questions? Anybody calling in for questions?
Currently, don't have anybody calling in. Usually, when I do the shows, I stick just to the guest that's on, and I try to keep it just centralized to where it's at. But I can look and see if we have any in chat. I don't know if we do or not. But when you were talking about how you kind of went off the subject, that's okay. It happens. And I think it's a good conversation. And it teaches others. So, you know, and I appreciate that. And I love to learn. And we currently don't have anyone in chat right now. But by all means, continue talking, because it is quite interesting what you were saying.
Okay. Well, we've been at this for quite a few. I mean, like I said, I'm only 21 years old, but in that 21 years, I've seen, and one of the things that I want to say too is I've seen almost the arc. You know, I've seen people start out, and then I've seen them go into addiction, and I've seen them, unfortunately, not recover from that. But I have also seen people come out of that and then not only go into a traditional lifestyle, but they've gone on to help people. And that's one of those things where, like I said, you know, with our information, is helping people helps you. You know, I was homeschooled, and so one of the things that my mom did was she said, okay, I want you to explain this to me. I want you to read this instead of me saying it to you, memorizing it, and then you spit it back. I want you to say it so that you understand it. And, you know, when we talk about being, you know, like when we say, well, what advice would you give to somebody in the same situation, you know? Somebody comes to you and says, hey, you know, I just lost my job, I lost a relative, you know, this is going on with me, I'm going through a lot right now. What would you do for a friend or a loved one that was in that you, and when you realize that, you know, that's when you say, okay, I get it. This is what I want. And think back, you know, think back to, you know, when you were in going through that, when you were in, you know, addiction. Think back to what you would want. Who would you want? Would you want somebody to come and say, hey, you know, that's not good what you're doing, you know? Or, hey, I don't know if you know this, but, you know, I think you're an addict, you know? That, maybe that helps some people, but for us, with what I've seen, that doesn't help as much as saying, hey, you know, I see you're thinking about going out. How about we go out instead of to the bar or to the drug house? Why don't we go out and pick some swamp tea? Why don't we go out and pick some red willow to make kinnikinick? Why don't we go see if the elder needs some fish cleaned, or if they need something, or you know, let's just go for a walk, you know, helping people, you know, that, you know, because that's the thing, you know, a drowning person can help a drowning person, you know, but if you're there and you're like, you know what, I see that person, go in there and say, yeah, let's go, let's get you out of there, you know, and that's part of the other thing, is just being there for people, you know. The thing is our way of life, there is, like I said, there's no curriculum. There's no set pattern or set group of instructions of you need to do this, this, and this to qualify as Indian, you know. You know, living that lifestyle is determined by the individual. And, you know, there are some things where, you know, okay, well, you know, this isn't exactly how most people live. You know, this isn't a healthy thing like that hoarding of the information. That's not healthy. But understanding people and what I've noticed in my life is just being an ear, just listening to those people, just being there, just saying, hey, you know, do you want to talk? Or, hey, what's going on? Or just even not even in starting the conversation, just sitting there and waiting for them to talk. You know, they people will talk about things. And you know, another thing, too, is crying, letting out those emotions. You know, one of the things that I did when I was younger and one of the things that we get our young people to do is go out and fast. And usually it's that when they're changing into their next stage of life from child to young adult, you know, and then again from when they get into a full adult, and then usually they'll go again when they start approaching, you know, the elderhood. But going out there and really understanding, you know, talking, sitting out there and talking to the spirits, you know, that's one of the things is they're with us. You know, the spirits are always with us. And going out there and just sitting out there, you know, just sitting, thinking and centering yourself, it helps people. But to talk about those things, sit out there, cry, scream, whatever you got to do, and just get those emotions out, because that's one of the things that we see is a lot of people talk about, you know, when I was going through that, it was because I was angry, I was sad, I was hurting, and I turned to this and that. You know, it's just because it takes away the pain doesn't mean it actually is helping you. You know, our skin, our nervous system, it has to hurt us, but it has to hurt us to alert us to, hey, take your hand off the stove. You know, or hey, you shouldn't drink that, you know, or hey, this feels really, really sharp, you know, let's be careful around this, you know. So it kind of has to do that to keep us safe. You know, likewise with those emotions, when you're sad, that's not the time to say, well, this seems like a time, like when we're grieving, you know, we tell our people, go for a full year, experience those four seasons grieving, you know. Don't try and rush back into life, because a part of who we are in the form of a friend or a relative is now gone, you know. We live in a world where we are connected to each other spiritually. That's one of the things we talk about in our ceremonies is connection to everything, connection to Mother Earth, connection to our fellow Anishinaabe, our fellow people. And when we see somebody hurting, we hurt to a degree as well. And so you think about all the people out there that are hurting, especially right now in this last year, my goodness, you know, it's saddening to think about it. And you know, we feel all the time, you know, like, I wonder, you know, and we try and remember people. We're like, okay, let's pray for the people that are not able to, you know, get their groceries ordered online. You know, something as simple as that. They still have to risk their lives and the lives of their friends and family by going in there just for food and essentials, you know. So understanding that how we are connected to other people, how other people are connected to us, helps us to understand how we in turn are connected to them. You know, our actions affect them, even if not, you know, physically directly. You know, when I was talking about when I was younger, you know, seeing my fellow young people, my friends, my neighbors, seeing them go down that path I did feel bad, and I did feel like maybe I should have done more as a person that goes to these ceremonies, as a person that is sober. Should I have done more to help them? And the truth is, you can't always help some people. There are some situations where for your own safety and your own health, when I talk about health, I mean your mental health. You know, our mental health is one of the least addressed things that we're like, well, you know, okay, I'll take care of my body. I'll eat right. I'll exercise. You know, I won't do anything. I won't put poisons in my body. Emotionally, okay, yeah, okay, whatever. I'll keep friends. I'll have friends. You know, I'll talk about things with them, you know, to make sure that my emotions are good. But spiritually, okay, yeah, I'll go to ceremonies. I'll be super Indian if I have to be, you know. But mentally, what even is that? How would I even take care of that? I'll just put it on the back burner. And then that thing grows and grows. And, you know, that story where there's the two wolves in you, that story where the grandson says, you know, what do you think, granddad, about everything that's going on? I mean, apply that conversation could be in anywhere throughout history. You know, our world is not perfect, but the grandfather says, well, I feel like there's two wolves in me. One is constructive and the other is destructive, you know. Am I going to go out and shame everyone and say, you're not doing this, or you're not doing that? Or am I going to go out and say, hey, everybody, let's put up a community teaching lodge where we can sit and talk about our Atsukanag, our traditional stories, so our young people hear them over and over. So it isn't, oh, my gosh, I heard this one time. I can't remember all of it. And son of a gun, that elder went and passed away. No, you know, having those children grow up on those stories, you know. So he says, the boy says, which one wins, you know, and the elder says, well, it's the one that I feed. And for us, we understand that, you know, it is true, which one do you feed, which choice do you make, but you need to understand, too, is that other wolf is still, it's a living being, you know, it has that need of food, you know, and attention, you know. One of the gifts that the Creator gave us was our emotions, you know, that being ignored or neglected, it can damage people, and that's another thing that in our community, there's a lot of neglect, and it's hard, because our own peoples, they never really got that full love before, because it had been pretty much beat out of them at the boarding schools. So they were limited in their capacity to love their children. And then so you just have this perpetually diminishing supply of love for the next following generations. And our thing is, you know, yeah, everybody needs that. You can't go through your life being devoid of emotion. It is one of the gifts from the Creator. You should not ignore it. If you want to live a balanced and healthy life, then you need to acknowledge those things. And so for us, that wolf, we can't ignore that wolf. As much as we understand it's a negative emotion, we understand that it is a negative impulse, we need to understand, how can I healthfully address that in a healthy way, you know? That doesn't mean, well, I've got a hankering for a sip, you know, let's go to this bar, but only find a way to limit yourself. That means, why am I experiencing these things? What is it? Let's go address it in a healthy way by, well, I want to be around other people. Okay, have your friends over and say, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to clean a bear. We got a bear. Somebody found a bear. Got it. We're going to clean him up, and we'll share the parts with the elders, and we're going to make bear grease. That's a whole other thing we can do. And so pretty soon you're like, wow, you know, I met that core need that gets masked in the addiction. You know, that's one of those things is, It is. It says it on the bottle. It says spirits.
Mm-hmm.
It is a living conscious. And it's changed to, you know, the pills. They're made with ingredients. Everything that's made is made from things that come from this earth. There is no big portal over in some part of the country where, oh, here's all the stuff that makes, you know, heroin or meth. You know, that's where this is coming from. You know, it is made from parts of our world. It is, they're changed. They're not recognizably natural, but they are part of this world. And for us, you know, that spirit takes those things and says, okay, I see this person is hurting. They have an emotional pain. So let's say, hey, this will take that pain away. And then it gets one of those little hooks into you. You know, or it says, hey, this will make you hallucinate that your loved one is there with you, you know. Take this, drink this, eat this, and I'll bring that person back for you for a little bit. And it is hard to resist those temptations. But understanding that, you know, I know that when I'm grieving, I need to be surrounded by people that love and care about me. And it is hard because when you're grieving, you want to push everyone away. But that's when you, as a person on the other side of that, need to be understanding that, yes, this person needs you. No matter how much they push you away, you need to be ready the second there's a crack in their pushing back. You need to say, okay, I'm here, because they're just fragile and they're hairs away from falling through those cracks. And, you know, understanding that you will see those people again when the Creator takes you to bring you to them, you know. And it's kind of hard because it's like, well, how do you explain these things to people when they're in the middle of, oh my gosh, I just lost my mom, I just lost my best friend, I just lost my little brother, you know. How do you explain that to the person when they're raw? Or, you know, I just got a diagnosis of a terminal disease, you know. How do you explain that to those people? You know, that's one of the reasons why it's important for us to preempt. I mean, we talk about, oh, preventative measures. Well, what do you mean preventative? Well, you know, we try and round up all the drugs, or we tried prohibition, all that. But it comes down to having that information put into people's brains, not forcibly put in there, they have to want it, and teaching them about the importance of our way of life, and for them to see, okay, I know this is what's going to happen. No matter how hard it gets, that those spiritual instructions are encoded into their spirit. And their spirit's going to say, you know, I understand you're going on, but hey, remember this. Remember what's going to happen. Remember how much better it's going to get. You know, and that's why we do try and make a very strong effort to put those cultural resources out there for people. And it's kind of difficult because you get into you get close to... like crusading about, you know, with the Catholic belief system is, you know, we know what happened with the boarding schools. You know, we don't want to send our children or make other people send their children to an Anishinaabe boarding school where they're like, yeah, you know, you need to speak Ojibwe, and if you speak English, you're going to get a yardstick across the back of your hands, you know. We're not talking about that, but what we need to do is we need to have it right out there. And that's one of the things that I understood was our speaking our language, singing our songs, just the simple word of Buju or Miigwech, you know, understanding that it's putting it out there and showing people, hey, here it is. It's right there. Not making it so that they don't have to walk 3 miles through burning hot sand with glass in it to find out their Indian name. You know, that's not fair to, that's not fair to them. It's not fair to the spirits, because they're up there and they're waiting to share these things with us. They've been there, and there's so much more that they're wanting to share with us, but we have to be willing to listen. And that's one of the things that when we have those things, addictions, we're kind of in a cocoon almost, you know, and we're not who we're meant to be. We go into that, it encases around us, and then we come out either, unfortunately, sometimes dead, or we come out damaged people, or some people are able to come out of that and say, that was around me. I wasn't who I was, but here I am now, and I'm going to go on, and I'm going to keep moving forward. You know, that's one of the things about our belief system, is everything that happened before, we can see. We can see things. If we really close our eyes and think about it and ask the spirits to show it to us, we can see whatever happened before. If we ask the spirits to show us what's going to happen in the future, they might not show us exactly what's going to happen, but they'll show us kind of a glimpse of that. If we want to see what could have happened in, like, say, an alternate timeline, you know, whatever, we could imagine that. We could see that as well. But the thing is, where are we? We are right here today, the 1st of May, 2021, at 8:51 Central. This is the moment, and it changes. Every single second, it changes. You know, when we do our sand teachings, that's one of the things we draw out, is the timeline. And we say, here's where we are. Every time it moves forward, what's in front of us stays in front of us. What's behind us stays behind us. What we hear, it's up to us to choose how we want to make this moment. Do we want to live in regret? Do we want to live in anger? Or do we want to live in positivity, ideally? Or do we want to live neutrally? You know, there are some people that go way overboard, and I mean way overboard, on the spiritual life. And I know, because I was one of those people. I was running around this traditional grounds, making fires, stacking wood, and my feet were bleeding at the end of the ceremony. And I realized, this isn't right. This is not, I'm not being who I am. I am Manganese. I am the son of Bagwaj, the son of Nashkewab, and my responsibility is to help the people and not say, wow, look at that weirdo, he really needs to moisturize his feet so they don't bleed, you know. I need to be present in the moment and not saying, look at me, look at how humble I am, look at how much I'm suffering for you people. Not to say that, but to say, I'm here. I'm just here. I'm here to help. And, you know, for those of us that have not experienced addiction, you know, I'm not saying, you know, we need to go out and experience addiction so we can understand what people in recovery are going through. But I'm saying we never really will fully understand what it means to be in recovery. And I really want to thank you and Patrick and all of your listeners, you know, Chimi Gwich, for listening to me, because I know it's probably like, what the heck, this kid, you know, 21 years old and never been through addiction, never been through recovery, what could he possibly, you know, this is, you want to talk about that, go somewhere else, you know. But I really do appreciate you all listening to me and letting me speak, and I do know that some of the things that I say are not, they're not easy to hear. They are hard because either they go against your beliefs or in your truth, they're just completely wrong. And I'm sorry, but I really want to thank Karen and Patrick for letting me speak and come on here, because I really have had a lot of fun being on here. You know, it's always, you know, the most fun part about talking is when you're talking. But yeah, I really am thankful for this.
Well, I'm thankful that you came on and spoke tonight, and I'm sorry that I got everything completely twisted at the front, because I actually was aware, but I forgot, because I've been so busy, and it just slipped my mind that you was not, that you had not dealt with addiction yourself, so I apologize for that. And I enjoyed sitting here listening to you. A very wise person you are, and I'm honored to be able to listen to your words. Thank you. And I hope that you will come back on again at a later date and talk some more.
Me, Gwitch. Well, I will definitely be here.
Okay.
And I want to thank you, too, real quick before we close off for doing this, you know. Because I know how hard it is to get the information, and just hearing other people talk, you know, it's hard, especially nowadays. And now this is so cool, because people can listen all over the country and all over the world too.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for doing this. Yes.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I'm going to wish you a great evening, and thank you again for coming on. I want to thank all of our listeners for coming on and listening tonight. I hope you all took something from his hour on the show. An amazing speaker. You're an amazing speaker. Thank you. And I guess we will conclude the show, and we will see everybody on Wednesday evening for another episode. But you have a great night. Thank you. And have a good evening.
Gigo Abamin, everybody.